Okay. Thank you. Thank you. in the business space. So I think that's sort of fine. That is just that I think that we do feel a sort of appointment and as a ministry that there is a need for us to introduce a new directive bearing in mind all the policy thrusts towards localization, supporting local manufacturing, supporting value addition, and also having in mind things like the localization of core community outside as a DPI, not a government department. So I want to read out the shareholder structure. I think you've got it. It's a picture of this. That's one for you to have. And also, I'm going to write at the end, and then that will be it for me. So part of the trade industry, the DPI and its agencies are required to adhere to principles, policies, and strategies of government as well. In particular, the National Industrial Policy Framework and the Annual Industrial Policy Action Plan, however, provide a coherent and consistent foundation upon which the DPI and its agencies can build in with programs and operations. Both the IPM and IPM place a great emphasis on the need to ensure that the substantial procurement power of the state is used in order to support deepening industrialization, regulation, and job creation in South Africa. Moreover, creating a more inclusive economy which grows in labor has a range of skill skills requires a clear focus on the development of productive sectors of the economy so as to develop a resilient and diversified domestic economy, not unduly dependent on sectors over which we have little control. Consequently, our efforts and resources must be directed to and aligned with supporting core policy objectives, building local productive capacity, supporting local value addition, promoting entrepreneurship and empowerment that equips our people to become reactors in the productive economy and job creation. Our first presumption that I see therefrom is that our resources and incentives ought not to be deployed to support the import of traditional products as the second property equipment or intermediate goods will be used in value added productive activities in South Africa. Where we face complex challenges, it will be imports of finished products that again are an integral part of the business plan that nonetheless includes elements that do support core objectives. The presumption ought to be that we decline to deploy entire resources to purchase imports from the traditionalists. In the case that our sole responsible for the development of our support measures or objectives feel that there is a compelling interest to deviate from this principle, they must return concurrently to the DPI's accounting officer
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'm Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
services protocol to the committee. The protocol itself was endorsed by the Standing Summit in August last year, in August 2012. And in June this year, the Cabinet Secretary approved that the protocol be submitted to Parliament for ratification. We've also circulated for the committee's consideration. We've circulated the protocol itself. We've tested through an explanatory note, which gives us background to the origins of the protocol. But the main focus of that explanatory note is to confirm that the protocol is in line with the African law, the Department of Justice confirms that it's also in line with our international obligations, state law by the Department of International Relations and Cooperation. You'll if you go through with both the explanatory note and administered in a reasonable, objective, transparent, and impartial manner. The justifications continue by allowing for mutual recognition of countries, individual countries' licenses, qualifications, and regulations. It doesn't prescribe what those would be, but it does create an enabling framework to allow for that if countries agree and can negotiate mutual recognition agreements. It does not prevent members from using subsidies to support development. This is in the WTO the CAS agreements as well. And it can provide support to support the development of services industries. Mentioned before in terms of the right to regulate members retain the right to regulate entry, pay, work, labor conditions for natural persons involved in training services, but it doesn't establish any obligations in terms of immigration requirements. It's based on what countries agree to implement in that respect. The protocol does not prevent members from entering into preferential agreements with third countries. Any one of the members wants to negotiate another services agreement with another third party, they're not prevented from doing so. And it also excludes government procurement from any disciplines in the kinds of support they would provide to the services sector. General obligation is continues to promote transparency in regulations and information exchange. It affects trade and services. It also regulates treatments of monopolies and exclusive services and suppliers to avoid a monopoly position, so there's a competition approach that's built into the agreement. It also allows for gender exceptions to allow any measures that may be in conflict with the obligations, where those measures are aimed at protecting public morals, protecting human, animal, or plant life or health, preventing fraud, or measures to avoid double taxation. There are some specific obligations which are implemented. These are the subject of negotiations. With respect to market access, there are no limitations on the number, value, number of persons, number of commercial presence or funds for the provision of services, unless these are stipulated in specific commitments which is to be negotiated. The specific obligations include a national treatment provision, which foreign service providers the same treatment as they provide domestic service providers. Again, this is contingent on reservations that are specified in the specific commitments which are also to be negotiated. There is a provision on progressive trade liberalization that's built into the protocol, which proposes that there are future rounds of negotiations 3 years after the completion of the previous round. So essentially, yes, there's an idea that over time we'll continue to deepen and widen the integration process in services, and that we have to take into account differences in economic levels of economic development among the different members of SADC. Specific liberalization commitments through successive rounds of negotiations. In the first round, which we will now, once the framework is entered into force, we'll have the basis to negotiate and conclude negotiations in two priority sectors that have already been identified and agreed for the first round, which include investment in communication, in construction, in energy, in finance, tourism, and transport. Other sectors to be negotiated in future rounds. The negotiations will place on a request and offer basis, so countries will set out a set of requests that they will propose to the other side, the other members, where market openings in countries in the region, and four countries have submitted offers so far, but the process really will kick off once the ratification of the protocol itself is completed. Economic benefits. We have, I think in just a short time that we've been saying this year, is that the services liberalization represents a key additional step in deeper integration in SADC. It complements the trade in goods liberalization that was already achieved in SADC. It will establish a regional market that can support the emergence and development of regional firms to provide services to a larger regional market. So firms established in the region will be able to do this, able to service a much larger regional market, and that's a basis for improving their competitiveness. It's also important to note that competitive availability of quality services underpins most economic activity in countries where there's a shortage of quality and efficiency priced services, which is the case in many of the smaller countries in SADC. And importantly, too, efficient services trade can support industrial and infrastructure development across the SADC region. So it's a complement to the work that we're already doing with respect to regional infrastructure and industrial development in SADC. There are considerable benefits. South Africa has probably the most developed services sector in SADC. Many of our companies are already very active in the region, in SADC and in Africa. The protocol and the commitment that we will negotiate following the entry into force of the protocol provides access for South African service providers into the region. With South African service providers, with South African companies, but as they participate in the region, they will also contribute to the economic development of the countries in the region. An edge and advantage in competing with service providers from outside of the region, quite a number of European and US service providers that participate in the region already, and having this agreement with the South African companies, competitive advantage in the region. And we also see the protocol laying the basis for wider services markets under the tripartite FTA in future. The tripartite FTA is focused now on trade in goods, but there's a built-in agenda for services trade in the future once this round is concluded. And we have something that will be the platform for negotiating with the wider group of 23 countries. Chair, that is the presentation. It's essentially highlighting the main features of the protocol itself. As I indicated, we have some explanatory notes in the additional note that some of the definitions. This is not a always immediately obvious what some of the provisions mean, but the additional note tries to clarify that as much as possible, and happy to take any questions.
Yesterday and came yesterday. Thank you. negotiate direct relations in countries. So, where you're able to
the country's heads of state and get them to sign things. So we gave them the use of the solicitor's capacity. And the legal opinion that we had, and this is how we'd understood it when it occurred in August last year, was that the fact that it had been blocked by the heads of state without necessarily having time to sign doesn't prevent us from moving towards ratification. So the reason we wanted to move towards ratification quickly is so that we can get to the next stage of negotiating the specific commitments. So we expect that the protocol will be presented to our president as soon as the static secretariat is able to do so. And we also have to do it for the other presidents that were not, I think only eight of the presidents have actually signed it. So it will go on a round robin in the region.
Thank you.
established since 1994. Another included by WTO commitment. WTO commitment is very applicable to the players, being classified under their budget regimes in the third country. I think right at the end of the process that our then President Donald, at that time President of the Republic, Nelson Mandela, intervened to get us to open the space for autos and petroleum products. But otherwise, we went through a very expensive process. What this resulted in was we did have an increase in exports, but the policy of export goods was not a change.
Thank you.
same negotiations. It's not going to be talking to God in the devil or not. The barriers that we start to be used and I to first make a gospel play and none of them have to stop the copy any longer. What really is important to now is that the service and I'm not going to be services to care that there are assets in the industry. Well, I mean, this is part of the narrative.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Some of the things on there. So the Europeans became so, and the concerns of the Chinese, and they're all buying these things. But I also want to say another thing that's in the global event is that it's also into the outsourcing, which is really a massive entrance right now on the last page of what we've got in the world.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Well,